All right. Hello. Welcome to For Profit, For Purpose, the show where we believe smart real estate investing is for everyone. Today, we're talking to a true go-getter. Imagine owning more rentals than you are years old. And that's the game this guy is up to.
I made my first million in real estate when I was 33 years old. I didn't believe it was possible to even be a homeowner after growing up in 20 different homes. I've spent my life learning the game of real estate entrepreneurship, to have the freedom to parent and guide my own schedule, and to express my purpose in the world. What is your purpose? How do you put that purpose behind what you do for money? I believe you were meant to make an impact. My real estate company was built around my purpose of having people discover what they are truly capable of. I'm Katrina Eileen, and this is my podcast, For Profit, For Purpose.
So Cody Davis, we are thrilled to meet you, and why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in real estate? And sure. You know what, let's start with, can you tell us how old you are?
Yeah, 20 years old.
I love it. Okay, so you're a baby.
Something like that. A little bit about me, 20-year-old real estate agent based out of Tacoma, Washington. I got licensed as a real estate agent at 19 years old, started out my career. I was a gymnastics coach for 4 years at the local YMCA. And then I knew I wanted to get into real estate. And so I started doing some yard work for a couple family friends. And from there, I got an offer to join an online real estate group, had some mentors reach out to me, and I got my license just to few weeks after that.
So how long ago was that that you reached out on the Facebook group and found your mentors?
I first reached out on Facebook about 2 years ago now. Actually, probably within the next couple of weeks or so, it will have been 2 years. And I got licensed as a real estate agent about 18 months ago, January 2019. And the rest has been history.
That's fantastic. So from gymnastics to real estate, and yep. Real estate done right.
Something like that, trying my best.
So how did you, you were 16 when you started taking care of the neighbor's lawns?
So I was 16 when I started coaching gymnastics.
Okay.
And then 17, 18, I started doing more yard work. As soon as I turned 19 years old, I got licensed. It was within like a week of being 19.
And so what was it that intrigued you about real estate at that age? I know my teenagers weren't thinking about real estate.
I got handed the Rich Dad, Poor Dad book at a very young age. And so that got me super excited about real estate, started studying. And then when I actually got through the book, I was super hyped about real estate, wanted to get into it, realized I was only 14 years old, put the book back down because I couldn't buy anything. And I ended up just getting back into it in high school.
So that's fantastic. And one of the things it sounds like you did right was surround yourself with people who, you're willing to do whatever it took, right? So you're reading the book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and you hear the big story, but you were willing to do yard work.
Yeah. Whatever it takes to get involved with folks that are in that space.
That's fantastic. And are you still doing things with those people who were so part of your early efforts?
Some of them, I've actually helped them place some of their money into investments. So it's came full circle. So someone I was helping paint houses with, and he actually ended up putting some money into an investment with Blackwell, the company I'm working with. So it's just come full circle.
That's fantastic. And, when you talk about a go-getter, that's really quintessentially what a go-getter is. They're the ones that are willing to do the things other people aren't. But also it's being able to see opportunity, right, and connect those dots from things that other people might think are meaningless, but actually they mean everything.
Little things add up.
Yeah. So tell us, give us the play-by-play. Tell us what the buildings you have are and how you acquired them.
Sure. So I started out, my very first deal was in October of 2019. So it was actually, we're like 2 weeks short of a year. And that was a 12-plex. Now, At the time, I still don't qualify for bank financing. I can't go to the bank. Even if I had the money, I can't go to them and say, hey, I want to get this loan on this property. Just, I don't qualify. I don't have the track record. And so I had to approach the sellers a little bit differently and ask for what's called seller financing, where they acted as my bank. Mm-hmm. And I had to come up with the down payment. Now, I'm 19 years old. Granted, I have no family connections in real estate. I've got no friends in real estate. And so I couldn't just bank on their credibility. So I had to go to the seller and say, hey, I love your deal. I've got the money. I'd love to do this. And then I negotiated. They are going to finance 90% of it. So I had to come up with about $112,000.
So what gave you the confidence when you wrote that offer that you could bridge that gap?
I would not have been able to do that deal. And I fully admit this, I couldn't have done it by myself. I had to have a mentor. And for me, my mentor was actually the owner of the firm, Blackwell. Blackwell Real Estate's really focused on investment properties, raising capital, property management, asset management, and investment planning for the long term. And so I really just banked on using my resources here. And I did not raise that money by myself. That I used the help of folks in the office. And because of that, I got my first deal. I got the confidence to then go do a second deal, another 12-plex, 9 months later, and then start raising money for myself.
So it's two projects under your belt.
Two properties, yeah.
And it sounds like one of the most important, what I'm really would love to hear is your advice to people in your shoes, right? Or actually 18 months, 12 months behind you. If you were looking back to when you first started, what's the best advice your current self would give that guy?
Sure. So I think of everything as I'm working towards a destination. We've got the journey. And it's a lot quicker for me to hop in someone else's car and drive there than it is for me to build a car and try and drive there or walk there. And so I found a mentor who already had the vehicle, had the model, the mindset, and the wherewithal to put it all together. And I essentially, as a metaphor, I got in his car and made sure that I wasn't getting kicked out.
Right.
To stay in that car until I got my first deal and then until I got my second deal, and it just keeps on expanding. But find someone who's already done it and then do whatever it takes to show enough value to where they want to help you succeed.
I think that's really key, because a lot of people will have questions and say they want something and they'll seek out mentors and ask for help, but where I know mentors really, people can really take time is when they see someone actually taking action and demonstrating they're willing to do whatever it takes, they're willing to pay that price. So what kinds of things did you do to get the attention of your mentors so that they knew that when they spend time with you, it's time well spent?
I just studied really hard and I didn't give up. If I don't quit, I can't fail. So I just kept on studying at Blackwell. They provide, it's called Cardone University, for all the brokers in the office. It's an online training platform they can use 24/7. It was a 3-year program. I finished it in 4 months, 4.5 months.
Wow.
So I showed that level of commitment. Granted, I didn't have the most sales in the office. I didn't have any sales in the office at that time. But I wasn't about to quit because I knew I could make it happen. And I still don't have the most sales in the office. But regardless, I'm sticking to what I know and I'm learning what I don't know and I'm continually growing every day. Mm-hmm. And I believe that at the highest level, that's what any mentor is looking for. It's just continual growth over a long period of time. And for folks that are in my shoes or 12 months or 18 months behind where I'm at now, got time for continual growth. You can get massive just by growing a little bit every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really great advice. Talk a little bit about I'm interested in the people who were in your life that you saw that they were in real estate, and you just took whatever place you could in their world, and that was cutting the grass. And how did you go from cutting their grass to having them be your investors?
Well, it was just letting them know what I was doing. At 19 years old, I was 18 when I first, I was 17, 18, I was doing those projects. And I told them about my goals, how I wanted to get a duplex, get a fourplex, get an 8, 12, get up to 100 units someday. And they're like, yeah, me too, kid. And so if it's not applicable, like people kind of just brush it off. But continually letting them know, like staying in touch, like, hey, this is what I'm doing. I just learned how to do this. I want to share it with you. Mm-hmm. The ability to share something that I've learned with someone, it shows that I genuinely care. And I really let them know that I appreciate everything they let me do and all little projects, because that got me to where I'm at now. I wouldn't have been here without them, because I wouldn't have been in that group. And so I just make it known that I really appreciate what they did. And that's what scaled to today.
So there's something very distinctly different between what you did and what a lot of people do and are doing in today's world, right? They're using technology and they're putting people on drip campaigns and thinking that, you know, if they have drip campaigns and, you know, these things set up and automatic this and automatic that, that's keeping in touch. And what you just described is something that very few people do.
Yeah, we've got folks in the office who do drip campaigns. We have all that provided for us to be able to just make contact. Mm-hmm. I mean, it takes 5 to 12 contacts to close a deal on average. And like knowing the numbers is also super important too. But beyond just the numbers, at my age, I don't have the credibility just on my own to do a drip campaign.
Tell us a little bit about your purpose and your drive behind what you're doing. Why is it that you want to own 50 properties by the time you're 21 or 22, excuse me? What difference would that make?
So the 50 properties, the 50 apartments, I kind of reworked the numbers based on what I've currently got. So it's about a double on what I have. Mm-hmm. And at 50 apartments, I would be able to retire if I wanted to. It is financial freedom. I would make more than enough to cover my monthly bills, and it would allow me just to expand like crazy, start utilizing all my extra dollars. And then at that point, every commission I bring in for helping people do what I believe in and what they believe in is expanding their net worth and their portfolio, all that just gets reinvested into the business.
And so really your driver is, so there's so many different conversations around money, right? And around what we're capable of and what we can actually do, and that self-talk where, you know, the why can't I do something overshadows why can. Why I can. And you've really turned that on its head.
Yeah, the main driver for me, number one, is family. That's like end all be all. I take care of my family, we're good. But beyond that, when that's handled, how do I help other people so they can take care of theirs? Mm-hmm. And that's the exact order. I'm not buying a fancy car. Buying assets that cash flow, so I can help other people buy assets that cash flow. So they can feed their families, I can feed mine. And when all that's handled, then I will splurge and buy a nice car. I'm a car guy, so I love cars. But I'm disciplined in the beginning.
So what kind of effort would you say you've had put in to this point? And do you know anyone else, and who's been an example of putting in that kind of effort in anything in your life?
In any So to answer your first question, it's been a lot of work. It's not easy. An example of a lot of work, I had two of my apartments flood this past weekend out of nowhere. I finally thought I was on autopilot. I hadn't had to go out there for months other than just to check it out. And then it happened. But the newer property I just got, it's been a lot of work. I'm working every single weekend. I'm actually going to work on it tomorrow. It's not free. Like, there's a price to getting in, mm-hmm. which for me was zero down, but then there's a cost of owning it. And that's the piece that a lot of people don't think about. Like, what's the long-term play? And for me, it's going to be super time intensive now. It costs a lot of time, but it's going to give back a lot in the future. So I work very hard, and I don't collect any of it. Like, I don't touch the cash flow. I don't touch the principal. It's just for a future date.
Couple more. I want to get to some nuts and bolts and nitty gritty, right? And how you find off market properties, how you raise capital, and those kinds of things. But before we do, you mentioned valuing time and actually giving time. And I honestly believe time is the most precious resource we have, mm-hmm. and far more than anything else. And so, talk a little bit about valuing your time. And also, what I think I've heard is there's no job you wouldn't do. Like, you'll scrub toilets, you'll go trash out a place, you'll do the work, right, that nobody else wants to touch. Is that right? Did I get that right about
you? Yeah, I'm not above anything.
So what's the grossest job you've done so far? What's the hardest job? Whatever. Hardest, grossest, whatever.
The grossest job was dealing with bed bugs.
Oh.
That was terrible. I mean, it was awful. But that's been fun.
So talk a little bit about how you value your time and how you choose where to spend it.
I put zero value on my time right now because it's the only way that I'm going to get ahead. Like, I can't, like, if I put a value on my time and I don't achieve that value, like, let's say I value my time at $100 an hour. Or $20 an hour.
Oh, I get you. I was actually gonna say I would highly disagree that you don't value your time. Somebody who doesn't value their time would not be doing the activities and the things that you do with the minutes that you have. So,
well, I can't put a value on it.
Time would be, you know, doing all the things that we can fill our time with that are meaningless. And it sounds like you fill every minute with something productive.
Yeah, I guess I might have the wrong perspective. I don't know. But I don't put any dollar value on my time because I don't get paid for the amount of hours I put in. Like, that's just not my job. And I don't have a salary. It's only commission. So if I value my time at $30 an hour, $50, $100, and I don't make anything, all of a sudden it's going to demotivate me. Like, it puts me down. So I just make it, like, I just say, okay, it's worth zero. How do I work for zero and eventually get a big payday? Like, I'll put in any amount of hours it takes. I've put in 100 hours on a deal before for it to fail. I put in 10 hours on a deal and it went through. So I don't price my time. I just work towards my potential. I work towards the possibility of what could be. So I don't get consumed up by liabilities, like wasting my time on silly things. I don't work towards a dollar amount. It's really just a potential thing. What could I get to?
Okay. So what would you consider a waste of your
time? For me, I don't really know because I don't watch TV. So
would that be a waste of time?
That would definitely be a waste of time. That's not getting me anywhere. But everything that I'm doing is always just purpose driven.
Yeah.
And so it's either meeting new individuals, getting in front of the next client, or trying to. I don't have a huge client base at 20 years old. It's just the reality of the situation. That's something that has to grow over time, from building my credibility, from doing things like this and buying more deals and helping more people buy more deals. And that'll happen. But a waste of time right now is watching TV, because that doesn't get me closer to my potential. Like, you're either growing towards it or you're growing away from it. And I just want to make sure I minimize the amount of time I spend growing away from my targets in life.
So how many people are in your Rolodex? And I just found out from some of the younger people in my company, they don't know what a Rolodex is. Have you heard of that before?
Yeah, I work with a bunch of older guys, so I've heard those terms.
You know, it's the little, okay. I'm glad I'm amongst the older guys now. So
older guys, no.
So how many do you have in your Rolodex that you are keeping in touch with on a regular basis that are have properties that are targets that you'd like to acquire?
Right now? Mm-hmm. Three.
Okay, so it's manageable then.
Oh, it's really manageable. And it's all about the number. I'm not targeting three single family homes. I'm targeting three 12-plexes.
Right, which would put you right at your goal.
Yeah, I'm right at my goal. I'm two buildings away from hitting that goal. So it's super meaningful for me. But I keep it manageable.
That's how you're connecting with them initially is calling them, right? So
yeah.
How many phone calls did you have to make to have enough meetings that you actually have three that you're in communication at that level with?
I didn't track them.
You didn't?
To be honest.
Yeah.
I'm not going to focus my time on counting.
If you had to guess, is it 10? Is it?
No. No.
Okay, so it's more than 10.
A lot more than 10. It's hundreds.
Hundreds. Okay.
I mean, I've spent so many hours pulling contact information, trying to find folks. Like there has to be a certain demographic for these owners. Like they've had to hold it for a certain amount of time mm-hmm. in order to be able to even sell or finance, because I don't qualify with the bank yet. So it has to be seller financeable, meaning they can't have debt or they have to have very little debt for my situation. And they've got to be open to selling, meaning they're probably not some 30-year-old who made it rich and just bought up a bunch of deals cash. I've met a guy like that. He won a multiple $100 million lottery out of Soap Lake, out of all places, like this 1,600 person town. And so there are folks like that that are just like, shoo, go away. I don't need the money. And so I have to set in my criteria. I got to target folks that are likely in their 40s and 50s, they own it outright. They love the income, but they don't want to manage it and they don't want to manage their managers. They just want to be able to travel and get income. And so that's been my target demographic, people in their 40s or 50s, folks that have owned their assets for over 10 years. And they're just open to getting income and a little bit of cash up front. And that's what I've been rolling with. And that takes a lot of time to find those when it's just a one-man show. Mm-hmm. When it's just me, because that's all it is, I find deals. Like it takes a lot of time.
So how many hours would you say you've put in to researching properties to find the owners and reaching out to owners of properties that are potentials?
I mean, I probably work 80 hours a week or more.
80?
80.
Yeah.
It's not easy, but my hours are also all over the place. Like there are days where I can't sleep on a Saturday and I end up working Saturday and then I work Saturday night into Sunday. And it's like, my body doesn't have a calendar. It doesn't have a clock.
Doesn't have a calendar. That's fantastic. That's great.
I just got to do what I got to do to get to the next level.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's it.
So that's how you find your properties. Tell us how you raise your private capital, or how you're raising the down payments. The sellers, obviously, you have the conversations and they're willing to, they believe in you. They're willing to sell to you and provide the financing, but you still have to come up with a down payment. So
right.
How are you making that happen?
Yeah, so to be honest, my first two deals, I just had help from folks in the office. I got the conversation started, found the deal, shared the deal with folks in the office, and they helped me come up with it. At 19 years old, I'm not going to lie, I wasn't able to do it myself. Since then, since learning those skills from them, I have been able to raise about $400,000 personally outside of those deals. But for my first two deals, I used help. I asked for help. And with that help, I raised $250,000. Now that was solely because of the folks I had in the office on that $250,000. The first $250,000, I couldn't have done without folks in the office. The biggest thing for me is I just want to learn the skill.
Did they actually have the conversations for you? Did they go out and raise it for you? Or were you part of those conversations?
So this is a whiteboard right behind me. I actually pitched an investor that they brought in from this whiteboard. So at Blackwell, I had one-on-one training to make this pitch. Hours were invested into me to be able to make it. And the owner of the firm sat just to my left here. The investor sat to my right. And I was up here and I had to go through the numbers, how the deal made sense. And I botched that conversation. And then the owner of the firm took over and he got the money. But for me, I'm not going to sugarcoat it because there are folks listening in on the call that it's use help because it's the quickest way to do it. Get someone's help. Use someone who's already got the legal structures in place to actually raise the money. I didn't have to go to some attorney and draft up all the private placements and all the docs to back it with the real estate. And I actually got to use a contact that I made through the office to do what I wanted to do. They already had it all set up. They did it the right way. So I got to piggyback off that. Mm-hmm. Now on past deals, yeah, I've been able to raise some money, which has been great. And I made those pitches by myself and that's where it starts to pick off. But, for me, it's just learn the skill and then figure out how to multiply that into bigger efforts.
You know, and of course, I know that it wouldn't surprise anyone, right, that you you used your resources and you had great support and you were still the one at the blackboard, at the dry erase board and making that presentation and willing to botch something.
Yeah.
And so talk a little bit about that. Like, did you have to overcome any fear or was it pretty easy for you?
Oh, I was super scared. The investor came in and the best part about this is I forgot to even tell him the price. I was so concerned. And then the head of the firm was sitting there and he's like, all right, so share us a little bit about the deal. And then I finally just got my terms out, but there's a first for everything. And the fact that I'm going to mess up or that someone else is going to mess up isn't a reason not to do it. Mm-hmm. Because you got to make those mistakes to get past it. But now looking back on it, I'm like, that's awesome. It's a fun memory because it made me much more comfortable. I was uncomfortable talking about money. That was my problem. I wasn't comfortable, but now that I've done the deal a couple times, it's just like, oh, it's $125,000, or oh, it's $250,000. Oh, we need $400,000. How do we do that? And I start thinking in different ways to make it happen. I'm not so focused on, oh, am I going to forget the deal? It's like driving a car. The first time you drive a car, you're focused on every little thing. You're not listening to music, and then you do it enough, and now you're listening to music super loud, louder than you should be. And you don't have to just focus straight where you're going. You can look to the sides. You're like, oh, that's a cool sign. I want to go to Disneyland or whatever's out there. It's the same with the business side of things. I can finally take a clear view of what I'm looking at.
So what kinds of terms or what do your investors expect?
Sure. So it depends on how much they're investing. It depends on the deal. There have been deals where investors make 12%, 10%, 8%. Depends on the opportunity. If it's a riskier opportunity, they're going to make a higher percentage return. And it's all backed by the real estate. But it really just depends on the opportunity. Right now, to get into my first deal, I paid 12% a year, paid 1% a month. And I'm okay with that because my tenants pay for it. But it is an added expense.
And is that, so that obviously isn't long-term debt. That's something that you're working to pay off?
Yeah, I should have that paid off within the next couple months.
And does the asset pay that off? Does the asset solely pay that off or are you paying that off through other earnings?
Both, yeah. Most of it's going to be through commissions and deals that I've had to put together. It's not free money. Like, mm-hmm. If you're not planning on making any money, you shouldn't go borrow $1 million or 12%. That would not be very intelligent. There has to be an exit plan for it. On one of my deals, it's just to pay it off. The second deal, the plan is to refinance into bank debt and cash out the investors. So there has to be multiple plans, because I don't want to get locked up into super expensive money for long periods of time, because 12% on a credit card on $100 isn't a lot of money, but 12% on $250,000 starts to add up for someone in my position. So it
adds up for anyone.
Yeah, it's a bunch of money.
It is a pile of cash.
Yeah. So you got to have exit strategies. It all comes down to your deal. You got to love your deal. You got to know your deal.
Yep. And so then your investors who will invest with you and give you the capital for your down payment, how long do they anticipate staying in the deal? How quickly will you return their money to them?
It was structured as a one-year note. Okay. So they get 12%, they get cashed out. I extended one note. This is all by investor preference. So we reached out and said, hey, would you be open? And we, being the head of Blackwell and myself, because he helped me raise them this initial money. So we reached out and said, hey, would you be open to extending? And they're like, yeah, I like the income. So there are options. If I couldn't have paid it off at that point, we got the extension. If we couldn't have gotten the extension, I would have had to refinance, and I would have had to call up folks that I've met over the past year and a half, say, hey, I need 125, or I need 65 or 70 or whatever the numbers at that point. And I'd have to refinance it into new debt. And then I'm just playing with debt to take out debt. And it starts to spiral out of there. So I'd like to be able to pay it off.
Right. Right. That ends up being eating up all your return.
Yeah.
All right. So what else should we know about you, Cody?
Oh, I'm not going to quit. I'm going to keep on going.
Just finish, right?
Yeah, I created a YouTube channel that's going to track everything I'm doing from start to finish as I go from 24 now, to 1,000 apartments by age 30. And awesome. So that's been a little fun side project. I'm just, everything that I'm doing every week, just so that when someone gets, like, someone will see this in the future, and if they want to repeat it, I want to make sure everything is documented so they can go do it themselves.
I love that. I love that. That's your obligation, right? Like,
yep.
Do well and help others do well. So, man, that's just such a beautiful philosophy to have in life. So tell us about the YouTube channel.
YouTube channel. So
you're an investor and a YouTuber?
Well, the YouTube is more so just to create a step-by-step for everything I'm doing. Because there will be a point where I'm so busy, I can always figure a way to do it. But there will likely be a point where I'm so busy, I won't be able to do as many calls to help coach folks until I get to a point of being super stable and making that the sole focus of what I do. And so I want to just document everything. Like, I've made a video about raising money. So some of the key questions I've asked investors for raising money, talking about deals, underwriting deals, the four key metrics of real estate, and some of the other aspects. I made an intro video, and I was looking back at my first videos. I'm like, wow, I was super blocky, and I was a little less blocky. And so excuse the first few videos being very subpar, and probably all of them right now, but they're getting a little better.
I think that's fantastic. You're willing to share and put your experience out there, because people will definitely benefit from it. And you know what? You wipe away everyone's excuses. So I had to tell you, when we talked to you, 3 weeks ago? I said, hey, you know, I saw your deal on Facebook. I want you to talk to some of the people in my office and find out how you're doing this. Total honesty, people said, how did he get into real estate in the first place? Did he, is his family in real estate? You know, they, people will automatically think, oh, someone had a leg up, right? When they see somebody do something they don't think is possible. And the truth of the matter is he didn't. He started out cutting grass, right? Like he knew you wanted to be in the game and you just got in any place that you could.
Yeah, I didn't have family. I didn't have friends who were doing this. I'm the first guy in my family tree that I know of anyway, who have apartments. Either my parents have houses, but nobody has rentals. And so I'm really the first one. They were really worried about it in the beginning. Like, oh, well, you're taking out a lot of debt. Like I got a bunch of debt. Not gonna lie on that. But they were worried about that in the beginning. But now they're like, oh, you got it. You're good. They were really worried about me dropping college to do that because nobody's done it in our family. So they don't know what they don't know. Just like,
talk a little bit about how you got to the place you made the decision to drop college. That's not easy to do. And how did your family react? And then I guess what I have, yeah, talk about that.
It was easy for me to do. I didn't like school, but I was the first guy in my family to not do college all the way through. I did not see it through. My grandparents, my uncles, my aunts, my parents, my sisters going to college, my cousins. And so it was a big deal because I was the first guy not doing it. But I didn't see how a degree was going to pay me. It was a piece of paper.
How a degree was going to pay me.
So it's a piece of paper, just like money. Like I'm trading money for assets. I can't trade my diploma for an asset. I mean, I can't trade that diploma for my apartment buildings. Granted, it might have gotten me in a position to make more money, but it would have cost me something more important, which is 7 years of my time. Now, looking at it from this perspective, now that I've got a little experience, it's 7 years from now, I should be at a couple hundred apartments. That's a big opportunity cost that I didn't know about. So it meant everything to drop, but I was in a position of not liking it. And my parents, it was a sales cycle. I was already taking Cardone U. I was already at Blackwell when I was going to college. And so I was still going to college. Folks in the office said, yeah, you should consider just not going. And so I chatted with them about it for a while. And then I brought it to my parents who were like, no, you're going. I was like, all right. So it was a sales cycle. I had been going through Cardone University. I brought it up a couple weeks later. I structured my pitch a little bit different. They said, well, let's get through the end of the quarter or semester, whatever the terms are, and then we'll reevaluate. And then a week later, and I said, fine, I'll do that. And then I said, a week later, I want to meet with them again and talk about it. And I just said, this isn't for me. I'm done. And they said, all right, you can be done, but you need to finish the quarter. And I was like, deal. So I finished the quarter and I was done. But it was a sales cycle. I had to get them comfortable with the fact, like I wasn't making any money yet. I dropped out of college and I still didn't make any money for 3 months. And now I was thinking in my head, uh-oh, this is not good. But it was a text message. It was like 10:30 at night from a buddy that I used to coach with at the local YMCA. He said, hey, can you help us buy something out in Bremerton? And I was like, yes, I can. I responded 1 minute after. And then I sold them a duplex a month later. From there, it started to transition into other deals. But looking back on it, my first deal was from a lead that I had cultivated. Granted, he reached out to me, but it's someone that thought about me. And then we did a duplex. We did an investment property for the first one. So I thought that was pretty cool. But that's how it played out leaving college. Now, college is for a lot of folks. The biggest thing for me being able to make this work, like I was talking with some folks in the office, and I asked them, why didn't you kick me out? Why didn't you make me leave? Because I didn't make any money for 6 months. And I probably still don't make as much money as I could be. I'm working on that, scaling that up. It's above average. But the point of it, I didn't make any money for quite a long time. And I asked them, why didn't you kick me out? And they said, well, I was waiting for you to wash out. It came back. I was listening to Grant Cardone every day. It's like, if you don't quit, you can't fail. No, all right, I'm not going to quit. And I didn't get kicked out, luckily, because it turned into something much greater.
Like you said, do whatever you can to stay in the car.
Yeah. Do whatever you can to stay in the car. Get a couple seatbelts. I don't care.
So you, one of the things you said there was you had a friend text you at 10 o'clock at night. So what that tells me is you were talking to people and you were letting people know what you're up to and what you're doing.
Yeah. People knew what I was doing and what I wanted to accomplish. And they knew I wanted to get a duplex. And they were actually originally asking about a house, but they knew we had talked about duplexes. And I said, well, what if you did this? You'd live for free. And they're like, oh, we can live for free. Let's do it. So we found them a duplex for $300,000. The sellers put on a brand new roof. Over the past year, their duplex has gone up about 25% in value.
I was just going to say, man, over in Bremerton, that's got to be good numbers.
It went from 300,000, now it's worth like 420, 430. So they've gained 130,000 on a $60,000 investment. So they tripled their money.
Were they your age? Were they young or?
They are a little bit older.
Okay.
Like 8, 9 years older than me.
8 or 9 years. Okay.
So there's, yeah, so they're still young.
So they're like, 25?
No. But yeah, so we took their 60. We got them into a deal that paid for their living. They've since moved out. They're cash flow positive, like $1,000 a month. So they're making 20% on their money, which is phenomenal. And in addition to that, if they were to sell, they would have tripled their money because they got the 130 and they sell, they get the 60. So that $190,000.
Right? So they can now sell and get that tax free.
Over the course of a year, they have to live there for 2 years. But they would 1031 into a larger asset. And they'd increase their cash flow. They're not going to do that because they might move back. They really like the area. But it's a good opportunity. And that's what it's really all about. That's why I love apartments, because it's not about adding. Like, I don't like to add. I like to multiply. It's a lot faster. And I like to take time out of the equation. Mm-hmm. So we didn't add $60,000. We multiplied it by 3. For my deals, I borrowed, I raised 125, and I multiplied the equity by 3 to 4. So when I pay folks back, I still get 2 to 3x on their money. And they got a phenomenal return. I mean, 12% is for a passive investment. By real estate, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. So it making it a win-win for everybody. I'm taking
on. I'm sure those people are asking you, hey, what, put it back to work, right? Yeah. Precious, you need to go find something else they can invest in.
Yeah, what's the next deal? Mm-hmm. And I'm putting in a lot of work and I'm taking on the liability of the deal, and they get a passive return of 12%. It's a win-win. Mm-hmm. Granted, I have to put in a lot more time, which is why I get the equity multiples, get the couple hundred thousand in equity doing the deals. But it also just takes time because I don't get to go spend that on a car. I don't get to touch the principal ever. I just get to reinvest it and reinvest it and reinvest it.
So Cody, tell us how we'd get in touch with you and what we'd find on your YouTube channel and what's it called?
So it's complicated. My YouTube channel is called Cody Davis.
Okay.
And to find an actual video, it's actually a really blocky video. It's probably the worst video I've got up there, but it's buying 24 apartments at age 20. Pretty simple, but that's the way to find it. What you're going to find on there, I'm just going to keep on posting tips and tricks that I've learned. I don't know if you resonate with the term getting roasted, but I've been roasted in the office before on deals. And so I'm going to share some of the tricks and potholes to avoid if you don't want to get put on the burner. Like, you don't want to get burned in the office, because I've been put on blast for certain things that I've done, and it's all out of
okay. Give us one.
So I've completely dropped the ball on a couple deals in the past, getting docs in when I should have. I'm trying to think of how to best explain it. So there was a document for a recent transaction that we did a couple months ago. I was supposed to have one form signed, verified, filled out by X date, and I forgot. And I just got put on blast because it's something I had to do for my two apartments, so I should have known. I should have done it. But sometimes you just forget. I didn't get it done. And I put it off, and I was like, oh, that was due last week. And I just got sat down, and we had the honest conversation. And it's all about learning. That's the best part about being in an environment like this. It's never, there's never a negative connotation with any conversation or any, conversation that we have in the office. It's always a positive. It's always from a learning perspective, a coaching perspective, because everyone in my environment is on my side. Mm-hmm. And the folks that aren't, I don't keep around. Now, I can't kick people out of the office, but I don't associate everyone in the office here is awesome. Mm-hmm. But there are folks in my sphere that they're always negative, and I just don't associate with that because it brings me down. But back to your point, it's like I dropped the ball. I didn't get something signed that I need to get signed, and I got coached on it, and then I never made the mistake again. So it's always really positive.
Sounds like fun. So talk a little bit. So Blackwell Real Estate, they have great leadership. They've got a great name in the industry, and it sounds as if, and I believe this to be true, that you really can credit them with where you're at right now.
100%.
So talk a little bit about, like you said, everyone in my environment's on my side. I think that's so key to succeed at anything and have satisfaction, right, in what we're doing. But talk a little bit more about that philosophy and what does that mean to you?
Yeah, so getting everybody on my side, it's like playing a game, chug a rope. It's easier to win if there's no one pulling against you. So in the office, everybody wants to help everyone get ahead. Mm-hmm. And it's not just one-sided either. It's not like, oh, everyone wants to help the young guy. I'm the one finding the off-market deals. So what I offer to them, they've got clients. I got a text this morning. It's like, hey, I need deals in these counties. What you got? And then I send them over three that I had off-market that they didn't know about. And so I add value to them. I make their situation easier. I'm always on their side. Mm-hmm. And there are folks in the office who make mistakes. I make a lot more of them because I'm earlier on in my career. But it's all about a coaching perspective. Like I've dug into my thing, which is the numbers, the pitch. What to say when somebody gives an objection. Like I've made that my thing. And so when I hear folks in the office having troubles with it, then I exchange my ideas. And when I have troubles with my transactions, they exchange their ideas. And so it's making sure everybody's on my side. I'm on their side. Everyone's on their side. Because it's easier to win the war when you're not fighting anybody.
Right. So what are your most common objections and how do you overcome them?
To that point, when folks have objections, I make sure I tell them what they are before they tell me. So I structure the pitch. I show them the opportunity. And this is something I strictly got from Grant Cardone. I show them the opportunity. And then I loop in and say, and by the way, there's only three reasons you wouldn't do this. May I share them with you? And then I list the most common objections for that one situation. So the biggest objections, number one, I don't have the money. And I don't structure that as you don't have the money. I say the number one reason you won't do this right now is you're not liquid. Number two, you don't think it's going to work. And number three, you don't like what I picked out for you. Let me ask, have you seen enough to make a decision? And so I structure it that way. I make sure if it's overpriced, if folks think the deals are overpriced, I say, and then number three, you think the deal's overpriced. So have you seen enough to make a decision? And I memorized all of the objections I'm going to get. Some objections are, I don't know. Like when I'm talking with sellers, sometimes I'll say I'm not interested. I have to tell them they're not interested before they tell me they're not interested. I just have to give them an exit. I have to give them the exit to keep rapport, so I don't break that, and I have a future common ground. And so the objection is like, I don't know. Like, a quick way to overcome that is, but if you did know, what would it be? That's right. Every time. It's amazing. If I'm going and talking with someone, it's like, what's your favorite food? Oh, I don't know. But if you did know, what would it be? Oh, it's tacos. Yeah. What do you think about the deal? I don't know. But if you did know, what would it be? Oh, it's a pretty good location. The cash flow makes sense. I like it. And so just making sure that I understand all the objections someone could throw at me. Oh, I don't have the time for this right now, or I don't have the money for this right now.
So, kind all of right, next- so I'm not interested.
Of course you're not interested. You haven't seen enough information to be interested. That's as simple as it is. And then I go back into my pitch. It's like Jordan Belfort. It's the looping patterns. You haven't seen enough to be interested. And then I loop back, and I go back into the straight line selling. So if you haven't seen information, there's no way to be interested. You don't even know what you're getting. That's why we're chatting right now. And so it's about being able to handle those. And you always got to smile. I mean, I smile a lot on these videos, but it's like, that's been drilled into me. I have to smile after everything I say. Otherwise, it's not going to work. So building these little habits. And
so that didn't come naturally. That's actually a habit.
Oh, it's definitely a habit. You got to smile. It's something I got drilled into me from Card on You. And it's just it puts a little uptone on the situation. You
know, cheerleaders, and they put something on their teeth so that it's uncomfortable not to smile. Like Vaseline. I think they put like Vaseline plastic on their teeth.
Yeah. So I guess it's just really understanding what's going to happen. I don't like to give up control. And I give up control when I don't know or I can't predict what's going to happen. And so the best way to predict what somebody is going to say is know the only options they have to say to a situation. Because there's only so many objections.
And that must come, and that also has to come from experience, right?
Yeah, I need to get more experience. That's on me. I need to spend more time on this. And taking full responsibility for situations has also been helpful for my growth and for learning and understanding that no matter whose fault it is, it's my fault. And when I did that, I started learning a lot quicker. Because if I take responsibility for someone else's actions, I put myself in an uncomfortable situation that I have to learn from that I wouldn't have learned from otherwise.
Wow, that's a great perspective. So can you think of an example when you did that?
Yeah. A good example, I had a broker pitch me on his deal. It was an off-market opportunity. He said $600,000. Now, I knew originally the client that he had one in $650,000. He said, you can pick this up for $600,000. And I shared it with the client in the office. I said, hey, we got this awesome opportunity. You're going to make 10.5% cash on cash. The opportunity we were picking up for $600,000. And this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to, I laid out all the contract terms. They said, all right, let's do it. We signed the deal. We got mutual. We didn't get mutual. We sent it back over. My buyers signed it at 600,000. We sent it over. They countered at 650. The broker told me 600, even though we originally knew it was going to be 650. I said, all right, that's a good deal. We signed it. And then my buyer looks at me and said, you told me we could do this. You said we were going to do 600. And granted, that wasn't sure. I took it as my responsibility, but I was going off of the information that I was given from the seller's rep. So I immediately turned around and was like, all right, well, I should have prefaced the conversation as, look, we've got this opportunity. It makes sense at 650. I was talking with the seller's rep. They said we might be able to get it for 600,000. Let's write it up here and see what they say. And so I had to change my frame of mind, change my point of view, and learn from it. but like I shouldn't have pitched it the way I did because I didn't know 100% certain that it was going to go through, because the seller's rep told me one thing, but that's not the seller. And at the end of the day, it's the seller's decision. So I had to kind of take that, understand I need to frame my pitches a little bit different in the future. And since then, I've never done that again. I've never been put in that situation.
Yeah. And boy, what a different perspective that benefits you so much, having the ability to put yourself in their shoes. It takes a lot of listening to your intuition and being open to suspend your perspective. And that's gonna make a big difference for you. That's a very, very incredible
it's a discipline. Takes a lot of discipline. It's very hard to take responsibility when you know it's not your fault.
But responsibility doesn't equal fault, right?
Right. Right. And so it's not my fault, but I'm going to take fault for it so that I can learn from the situation. And that's something huge. If there are folks listening to this, it's like that in itself will accelerate you to where you want to go a lot faster.
Yeah. Words of wisdom. Okay, Cody, anything else that you, any other words of wisdom or sage advice?
I saw Curtis posted, where should I start, get a real estate license or find a mentor?
I'm glad that you, there we go. Question. See, good thing you know about these things.
I like Zoom. Zoom works well. So where should you start? It depends on where you're at. I mean, you should start where you're at. If you want to get a license, if you want to be a broker, you should get your license and become a broker. There's nothing stopping you. If you want to become an investor, I'll share with you right now, if you want to become a full-time broker, it's going to take at least 2 years to be able to get a bank loan. So you're going to have to take the path I did and go seller finance, or you're going to have to partner with someone who is already financeable. So you're gonna have to find an amazing deal and give up a lot of the ownership. So if you got a stable job, I'd say establish what your target is. It doesn't need to be some obscene target. If you wanna get a fourplex or a duplex, it's gonna be both the same down payment. Start learning the numbers. Understand that you can do 3.5% down on a fourplex, just like you can on a single family. And start looking at the numbers. What do you qualify for? The first thing is getting your, Total Money Makeover by Dave Ramsey is an amazing book. If you haven't read it, get your personal finances straight first, protect your four walls, make sure that you are good at your home or wherever you rent, your home life situation is stable. And then once you're there, pay off your credit card debt, pay off your consumer debt, if you got car debt, car loans, pay it all off. And now start putting money away to start investing. And if you've got the money to start investing, then make sure you're chatting with folks about multiple people about the best way to achieve your target, because there are going to be individuals, and I've seen this firsthand. I have clients now that had another agent in a different state say, hey, you should buy these deals. They're going to cash flow. It's two single family houses. They weren't very expensive. They were like $50,000 houses, but they bought these two houses on a real estate agent's recommendation, said it was going to cash flow. Very best months, they broke even. They didn't take anyone's advice. They didn't even bring it to me. They didn't bring it to any of their friends or family. They just said, I'm going in. I'm going to be a real estate investor. And now they're wishing they hadn't, because best case scenario, they break even in a non-appreciating market. So they're just getting debt reduction. And so I would say, first of all, get your four walls taken care of. Start putting money away. Make sure your liabilities are paid off. And then in the meantime, while you're doing all that, start chatting with folks who are doing what you want to do. If you have a target to get to 10 apartments by the next 5 years, regardless of where you're at in your life, then write that down every morning. Every single day, write it down. I own 10 apartments, not I will own, just I own 10 apartments. Get it into your head that you own them. And then build a target or build a model to get to 10 apartments. And stick to it. Don't quit. You might get it in the last 2 of the 5 years. It might take 3 years to get started. But if you don't quit, you can't fail. Keep singing the ABCs. And find a mentor in the meantime. That would be huge. I mean, I wouldn't have been able to do any of this without my mentor. And I'm going to say that for the rest of my life. I wouldn't have got started without my mentor, Robert Slattery, the owner of Blackwell. Without him, I would not own anything at this age. It just wouldn't happen. It couldn't have happened with my knowledge set. And I never say can't unless I have to. And I could not have done my deals without him, with what I knew. So get a mentor. Find someone who's in the space that you can trust and that has your best interests in mind for the long term.
And so to the question of should I get a real estate license, would you recommend doing, if he's already taking care of his four walls and has his W-2 income, just doing that in conjunction with moving into the real estate space? Or do you think a license makes a difference?
If that's what you want, I look at like the big players. For me, I look at what are the folks doing that I want to be like. And I keep going back to Grant Cardone, and that's the guy I've studied. He doesn't have a license. He doesn't have a real estate license. And so you don't need it to get ahead. And there are going to be folks listening to this like, oh, he's biased. He wants to sell you something.
He wants to sell you something.
Properties, I couldn't sell them all if I tried. So if you want to get your license, you should. 100%. And then find a brokerage who resonates with what you want to do. If you want to do single family rentals in the Midwest, find a brokerage who specializes in that. You want to do multifamily properties and assets that appreciate and cash flow. I mean, the four key metrics of real estate, you get cash flow, appreciation, depreciation, and debt reduction. Those are four key metrics that we analyze at Blackwell. And if you want to follow that model, then you find a brokerage that follows that model. If you want to do the traditional selling of single family houses, you go to Windermere or Coldwell Banker Bain, and you find your niche, and then you maximize productivity out of that. And then you take all the cash and you throw it into the assets that will get you to 10 apartments.
I'm glad you
all right, it took an hour to get to your question. I think that were all the questions. Those were all the questions.
Okay, well, Cody, I just want to tell you thank you. And it's an honor to be talking with someone who has the vision that you do and the philosophy and the message that you do, especially at the age that you're at. You have wisdom beyond your years. You're an old soul. And I bet a lot of people, I'm sure you've heard that before.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, the thing that has me be on your side is your philosophy of, you know, I need to do well so that I can help other people do well. And I think that's really what it's all about. So thrilled to meet you. And we'll be in touch further. And we're going to be keeping an eye on your career and the deals you put together. And hopefully we'll be helping you bring some across the finish line to reach your
goal. That was awesome.
All right.
Thanks so much.
Okay. Thank you, Code. Oh, wait. How do people get in touch with you?
I use Instagram. That's the easiest way to find me. So CodyD2020. Imagine that. For my first name, my last initial, and then the year. It's easy enough. If you want to reach out on that, then we can get in touch.
Okay. Well, Cody, thank you for your time and sharing so freely with your experience and what you've learned so far. And we wish you the best.
Thank you. We should do this every year. We should check in.
I like it. Let's do it. So you started in October 2019 with your first deal. This is October 2020. Okay. So I think we're going to do October.
All righty. Sounds great.
Annual check-in. All right. Look forward to watching you grow.
Thanks, Katrina.
Take care, Cody.
I would love to hear about your purpose. I'm always looking for like-minded people to collaborate with, interview, or do business with. Reach out to me directly at 425-230-4499. Not sure what your purpose is? I'm happy to share the guide that helped me discover mine. If you'd like that guide and a free copy of my Amazon best-selling investment book for real estate, visit my website at katrinaeileen.com. If this podcast brings you value, please like, subscribe, and share. Thank you for listening to For Profit, For Purpose.